Welcome to the Wounds of the Faithful podcast, brought to you by DSW Ministries. Your host is singer, songwriter, speaker, and domestic violence advocate, Diana Winkler. She is passionate about helping survivors in the church heal from domestic violence and abuse and trauma. This podcast is not a substitute for professional counseling or qualified medical help. Now, here is Diana.
There, welcome. How are you guys doing? Thank you so much for your support of the show and joining me today. Great to have you. And this time of the year, in September, which comes with a lot of changes. Now, you're probably experiencing some fall weather if you're on the East Coast of U.S., or could be like me, that it's still hot here. It's still 100 degrees here at the end of September. We did get some rain. This is the only time of the year we do get rain, is August and September. So we did get some rain. It doesn't cool off here until the end of October, but I'm out there planting for my fall crop and other changes that we're doing here is in the music room. If you're watching on YouTube, my hubby had the time to put together a background for my Zoom. So we've been moving stuff around in here in the studio. I don't have the bookcase behind me with all of the books and my sign. I did have the background of my synthesizer and my music equipment, which that's fine, but I really wanted to have my logos up on the screen behind me to match my branding and make it look a little more professional, right? And so I have behind me my DSW logo and I have my podcast logo. And that is accomplished by a green screen behind me. I'm not going to turn it off so you can see the green screen, but I actually didn't have to buy a screen. I just bought some green fabric, and it's hanging from a PVC pipe hanging off the ceiling. And so that was $7. So if you were wondering how to make your own, then that's the route that I would encourage you. You probably have some green fabric around that you can hang up behind you. And that's how they make movies. And so I think it looks great. It's my branding colors. And so thank you, Brian, for setting it up for me. And other news. At church, we're going through the book of Romans as a deep dive. We have a Master of Divinity, Dave Lindstrom, at our church. He's a founding member of my church, and he has taught Romans for a long time. And that's my favorite book. I can't get enough of it. So I'm getting up early on Sunday mornings to actually go to church, and I really want to learn some new things about Romans. But you can join me too. They are putting the notes and the audio on the church's website. That's Red Mountain Community Church. That's in Mesa, Arizona, where the church is located. I think it's rmcc.org is the address. So we've been talking about Bible study for weeks now. If you need some hand-holding while you dip your toe in the pool, this is a great way to do it. Our church has group Bible studies right now for men and for women. And you can go online and you can join the Zoom Bible study groups. And it's very welcoming. You don't have to know anything. You don't have to know anybody. You meet some new friends. You don't have to be a member of the church. And you just come and ask questions and talk about the Bible. So if you have any questions about that, be sure to contact me. I go to the ladies' Bible study on 7 o'clock on Tuesday nights. And so if you want to join me, I would love to see you. It'd be awesome. We could study together. So just a resource for you. Now today, we have a musical guest once again. And this one's special to me because she was one of my first music mentors back in the day when I was first starting DSW Ministries. I was just coming out of my abusive relationship, still healing from that, and I really wanted to get my music ministry off the ground. And so my guest today is Dr. Naima Johnston Bush, and you're just going to love her. I want to tell you a little bit about her ministry. Naima is an anointed singer, songwriter, worship leader, author, and speaker. She uses her artistic gifts to encourage her audiences to live a life of exuberant joy, powerful prayer, and sincere gratitude while sharing practical lessons to assist them in living their lives in the center of God's will. Engaged in full-time ministry, Naima travels the country singing and speaking for various groups, sharing her powerful story and life-changing stories. After an abusive boyfriend declared he would kill her, hide her body, and make sure no one found her, Naima gave her life to the Lord and is now on a mission to help women find wholeness in Jesus. Singing since she was a toddler, Naima has created an entirely new musical genre that reaches across cultures, spanning contemporary Christian music, urban gospel, and worship. She's a singer-songwriter whose thought-provoking lyrics explores life's hopes, struggles, blessings, and disappointments, while giving glory and honor to the never-failing love of the Savior. With a PhD in education from The Ohio State University, Naima has been ordained by pastors Terry and Tina Bell of New Vision Assembly in Jacksonville, Florida. Naima has written and produced her debut project entitled Everything. Naima is the wife of Pastor John E. Bush, who serves as the principal of Leesville First Assembly Christian Academy. Naima has chosen to embrace life fully with a joyful heart, a thankful spirit, and rooted in prayer. Her greatest desire is to teach others to do the same. So yes, an impressive bio, folks. And she has wonderful music. I have taken one of her courses. I have her books here on my bookshelf. And she recently adopted 2 children. She fostered them first. Her and her husband fostered these 2 children, and then a year ago, they officially adopted the kid. So she's going to tell you all about that and what else she's up to. We're going to hear one of her songs at the end of this podcast. So be sure to stay until the end. So I hope that you'll enjoy my conversation with Naima Bush. Here she is. I'm so grateful to have my friend Dr. Naima Bush on the show. It's so great to see you after such a long time.
I know. It's been forever.
Now, we've talked on the phone, but I don't think we've ever seen each other face to face.
I don't think we ever have. We've talked on the phone quite a bit, participated in some of my groups, and but I don't think we've ever seen each other, actually.
Yeah. Technology, isn't it great?
Yeah, it is.
Just reminiscing, we met in a Christian music community called Indie Heaven Radio.
Was it Indie Heaven Radio?
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't even remember that.
Yeah, that's how we met and no longer exists. It was pretty cool. I made some really great friends and connections.
Right.
And I took one of your mentoring courses, so I'll have to say that you really helped me to define who I am as a Christian musician, and that ministry vision has evolved and changed over the years. We were talking behind the scenes here, but you taught me to be true to what God has called me to do and that I'm good enough to fulfill God's call in my life. So I just wanted to thank you early on for inspiring me to be my authentic self. And for your example all these years.
Thank you for sharing that with me. I don't hear that very often. So thank you very much. It really makes a difference because you do so much. Sometimes you feel like God has called you to do and help other people and you don't get any feedback from folks sometimes. They just kind of go off and do whatever that is God told them to do. And they don't kind of turn around and say, this helped me. So I don't know. So I'm glad. Thank you very much for sharing that with me.
You're welcome. I do try and encourage people because you're not the first person to tell me that nobody ever says anything or gives me any feedback or am I doing anything that's changing anybody's life. So,
right.
Now we're going to talk about your ministry and you have a powerful testimony to share. Let's talk about recent events first. You had the worst couple of years out of anybody that I know. Yeah.
Yes, I did. Okay,
forget the pandemic. You had stuff going on top of the pandemic. So,
right.
Share what you want, what you're comfortable with.
First of all, I was diagnosed with non-alcoholic cirrhosis of the liver. And they're not sure why I developed that because they said you're really young for it. So I was in the hospital. My liver was barely functioning. And my mom came in with this plan, this holistic health plan. Between her and the Lord, I was healed. And then we moved from Jacksonville, Florida, which is where we were living, to Louisiana. It's a tiny town in Louisiana. And I went from New York City. I grew up in New York City. So I went from New York City to Columbus, Ohio, to Nashville, Tennessee, to Jacksonville, Florida. And then to move to a town where it was 60 miles to get to the nearest Kroger, it was like, wow. And I found myself really isolated and upset. And I wound up gaining back a lot of the weight that I lost, like 100 pounds. I gained back probably about 80 pounds of that. And so I got sick again. And so I've been really sick and I've been fighting that, trying to make a comeback, trying to lose this weight again. And it hasn't been easy, but I'm going to get it done. I'm going to get it done because my life depends on it. My liver doesn't function very well when I'm heavy. So I have to slim down in order for it to function. But while we were in Louisiana, the pandemic did happen, and we had always wanted children, and I was told that I couldn't have any because of my liver. And so I had to mourn that. I had to mourn that. I kept believing. I was like, God, you can do it. You did it for Sarah. You could do it for me. It doesn't matter how old I am. But the older I got, the more I had to realize that maybe that wasn't God's will for my life. So I had to mourn that I wasn't going to be a mom that way. And so my husband and I began the process of fostering, and we got two babies, a two-year-old and a two-month-old, brother and sister. And we got them the day after we were certified as foster parents. So we didn't have any time to get anything together. I wasn't even in town. I was in Florida on tour. And my husband called me and said, they called and said, they have these two babies. What should I do? And I was like, get them. They need us. And so he got them. And at first we thought they were just going to be with us for a couple of months because their mom only had a few things she had to do. But those few months turned into 2 years. And by the third year, the judge decided that it was too long. She hadn't done what she needed to do. And so he terminated them and they were free for adoption. And so we adopted them. So John Jr. is now 3. He'll be 4 in November. And Shade and Grace is 6. She just turned 6 in August. And they are a handful. They are a handful. So I was at home during the pandemic with these two babies because we weren't letting them go to school. They were going to daycare. My husband was a principal at a school, but we wasn't really letting them go out because they weren't vaccinated. There wasn't any vaccine at that point. And they were sick. My son was real sickly. And so I didn't want him exposed. So that happened. So I'm at home. I'm gaining weight because I'm at home and I'm learning to be a mom and I'm at home by myself. I'm isolated from everybody I know. I can't see my family because my family is in New York City. And then people started dying. My grandmother died and she died in New York City during the height of the pandemic in the hospital. So you can imagine what that turned into. She was probably on one of those refrigerated trucks and I was thinking about that all the time. And then a friend of mine committed suicide. And then my uncle committed suicide. And then my dog died. Oh my gosh. I think my dog dying really was probably the worst because I had that dog for years. I had that dog before I got married. That dog traveled with me. I loved that dog. It was like
I remember
my first baby, Bianca.
Yes.
And so she died. She was almost 17. She was older, but still, she got real sick and just died. And then my husband's dog, we had to put him down a couple of months later because he was having heart failure. It was just like, oh my gosh. And then I don't know if you remember Donna, can't think of her last name, it escaped me that quick. But Donna Lee, she passed away. I don't know if you know that.
No, I must have missed that.
Yeah, she passed away. And so I was really hurt when she passed away. She was in the mentoring group with us.
Yeah.
And yeah, that really hurt me. And then it was just like one after the other, all these people kept dying. And I was just so upset. And then I was so isolated. And my husband decided that we were going to move back to Florida. And so getting everything ready to come back to Florida. But I realized that I had been fighting depression. I didn't realize that I was depressed. And that was the reason why I was gaining weight. And then I realized that I had forgotten what my house was built on. You know that scripture in, I got it here, Matthew 24, I think it is. Matthew 7,
it's just
24. Anyone who listens to my teaching and follows it is wise, like a person who builds a house on a solid rock. Though the rain come in torrents and the floodwaters rise and the winds beat against the house, it won't collapse because it was built on bedrock. I forgot that my house was built on bedrock because if I would have remembered that my house was built on bedrock, I probably would have still been depressed, but I would have dealt with it a lot differently. I would have spent more time in prayer. I wouldn't have shut down. I wouldn't have. And that's what I did. I shut down. I stopped praying, stopped fasting. I was all about my kids because they took up so much time. They were so young. And I was in mourning and I didn't realize I was in perpetual mourning because I had lost so much, including my music ministry, because not only had we moved to Louisiana, which I couldn't get everywhere that I was going when I was in Florida. And that was like everything to me. I was traveling. I was doing 100 dates a year. And then I went down to 50 and then I went down to 20 and then I went down to 0. There were months where I haven't done anything. And that's how it is now. But I remember that my house is built on bedrock. My house is built on Christ. And so I've really made a turnaround in my attitude and in how I see life. And I have to find the joy again. And that's what I'm struggling to do sometimes. Some days I'm struggling to find joy, but usually I can catch it in the glimpse of my kids, playing with my babies or talking to my husband or remembering that I do sing and starting to sing or write some music. I catch that joy again. I'm still so blessed. So that's a long answer to your question.
People that are listening, they've probably gone through some horrible things too. And it's good to know that we're not alone in this.
Right.
I thought it was bad when I lost my oldest brother on the week of Christmas 2020. And it took 25 days for them to bury him, to cremate him, get the body. And we didn't have the funeral till December 30th. And yeah. That was bad. And
right.
We talked before the show, all the stuff that I had gone through. But yeah, you and I are both musicians. And that's, even in the darkest times, that has been, my lifeline has been that music.
Right.
That reaches the darkest place is when, okay, I don't feel like praying. I don't feel like reading my Bible, but I'll put on that song and God can speak to me through that song. Like, I'm still here for you.
Right.
And the emotions start coming back up. And I would like to get into more of your story from your childhood. You are a survivor of abuse, and our audience, they're all survivors as well. I know they want to hear your powerful story. If you could take us back to the beginning, to your childhood, where it all began. You set the stage for us.
That's a good question. I think it began with my parents and my weight. It always come back to my weight. They wanted me to be small and so, or thin, not because they didn't love me, but because they wanted me to be healthy. And they went about it, I think, in the wrong way. When you're 9 years old, you don't want to think about being on a diet. You want to eat candy and do what you want to do. But the thing that's interesting is that they left my brother alone. And he slimmed down naturally. But me, I didn't. And I think that if they'd left me alone, I probably would have slimmed down some. So in that, I began to think that I wasn't good enough. I wasn't worthy. And that opened the door for me to really become promiscuous from the time I was 14 to the time I was, till I got saved. I got saved, I was 22. And I think that's really kind of what set me up. It was that thought that I wasn't good enough. I wasn't worthy enough the way I was. And I didn't know that. I couldn't have put words to it then, but I just never felt right. I never felt like I fit in. I never felt beautiful. I never felt like lovely or anything like that. I just felt like a big blob. And so I'd give it away for free because that was how I found love. And so what winds up happening is, I went to college in Ohio. I went to graduate school in Ohio State, and I met this guy. And he was a real work. He was a piece of work, boy. He was something else. But I remember one night. Yeah, I remember one night. Let me just tell the story. I remember one night we were lying in bed, and he did some things to me that I shouldn't have allowed him to do. And that was really painful. And then physically painful. And then the next day he asked me, we were driving in the car. He was driving my car and he turned and he looked at me and he said, "Are you afraid of me?" And I said, "What?" And he said, "Are you afraid of me?" And before I could answer, he said, "Because I'll kill you. I'll hide your body and nobody will ever find you." And I believed him. I believed him. And he had already shown his true colors by hitting me. And well, he didn't really hit me. He bit me, like a lot. So I got the strength to walk away. We were actually living together, and I got the strength to walk away. And I found Christ soon after that. And as soon as I found Christ, he tried to come back. And he said, "I'm going to be like a check. I'm going to be like a credit card application in your life. I'm going to keep submitting myself to you until you say yes." That's what they do. And I said, "That's what you think. You are denied and this bank is closed." I said, "If you want to be with me, you have to come to church." And I never heard from him again. So that's my survivor story. It really was a thing about my self-worth, my eating definitely came out of that. From being promiscuous at such a young age, at 14 years old, being talked out of my virginity. This guy talked me out of it. He tricked me. And just after that, it was just like a free-for-all because I had given it up so freely the first time. So why not? And that's kind of what happened. Mm. But God has been faithful. God has been really faithful to me. And he's restored me. And he's given me a wonderful husband. I thought I'd never get married. And I got the best of the best.
Now, I want to have you tell the folks about when you discovered your love of music.
My parents say I came out of the womb singing. My mom tells this story about being in the crib and she kept hearing this noise. It was like, and she'd look around. She couldn't find anything. She's like, "Gary, what is that?" Gary's my dad. She's like, "What is that noise?" And he was like, I think that's the baby. And so my parents were all about music. My dad was in a band. He's an artist. My mother's an artist. So they were very artsy people. So there was always music playing when I was in the womb and poetry. My dad's a poet. And so I got my love from music for them. I grew up listening to all kinds of music, not gospel music at all. Not any kind of gospel music or Christian music. It was all like, I grew up listening to Muddy Waters and Motown and let's see what else. Donna Summer, anything you could think, just different stuff. Disco to rockabilly, hip hop. My dad played hip hop music, pop music, anything and everything you could think of, he would play. And so I got my love of music from my parents, really. And I began singing. Like I said, they said I began singing out of the womb. And I was always one of those kids who was like, I'm going to do a show. Sit down. Come in my room. I'm going to do a show. And my parents always sat there. They were so good about sitting there. They always would sit there. Mm-hmm. And they'd give me a standing ovation after it was over. So I don't want people to think that I had awful parents, because I did. I was really blessed. I love my parents, and they did the best they could with what they had at the time. I think now they know more. They do more. They do it differently. But that's where my love of music comes from, my parents.
It sounds like we had like a similar background, as my parents had a very eclectic music taste. Nobody in my family's a musician. I'm the only musician in my family. I think I have a cousin that sings in choir. That's about it. Yeah, my parents exposed us to a lot of different kinds of music. And I did the same thing. Me and my sister would put on presentations in the living room. We do dance routines. This was back during Michael Jackson era, and we did.
Yeah.
And we did little concerts for them in the living room, and they dutifully sat there and clapped and went to our choir, what do you call it, recitals. And I was in dance class. They came to all the dance classes.
Right. And I also went to the Fame High School, the high school
music and performing arts. You did? That's right. I forgot.
Yes, I did. I did. And I went there because my dad encouraged me. First, I went to the junior high, because that was before they had middle school. So I went to the East Harlem School of the Performing Arts for 8th and 9th grade. And then I went to the High School of Music and the Performing Arts for 10th, 11th, and 12th. And my dad was like, if you want to go there, because it was far away from my house, I had to take the train. My dad was like, if you want to go there, you go. My mom wasn't too crazy about me getting on the train by myself that far, because we lived in New York City. So I had to take the train pretty far down into Manhattan. We lived up in the Bronx. And so I really got a lot of training there. I met a lot of people. I did a lot of things. I sang at the Empire State Building for the 50th birthday. I sang at Tavern on the Green. I did a HBO commercial. I've done a lot. So I've been really blessed.
Yeah, I love Fame. I used to watch that all the time. And actually, one of my good friends was on the Fame TV show. I've got the music running in my head now. Thank you very much. The song.
Imagine how it was at graduation. We bust into the song at graduation. Fame, I'm gonna live forever. Yeah.
Now, you started a music ministry. Over the years, you're a worship leader, you're an author and speaker, and you had a lot of highs and lows in your music ministry. You want to share a bit about that?
Yeah, my music ministry, I left my job. I just quit my job. I felt like the Lord said, leave your job and go into full-time music ministry. And so I was like, okay, how do I do that? Because at that time, there wasn't a bunch of organizations like there is now. There was no Facebook. There was no Facebook. There was no YouTube. I think YouTube was just getting started. I certainly didn't know how to make a video to put on YouTube back then. There was no iPhone, so you couldn't just, there's no Instagram or anything like that. So I just quit, and I started to call churches and ask pastors that I knew, could I come sing for you? And that's how I got started. A lot of them said yes, and some of them said no. And that was always depressing. I had this wall in my office called the wall of shame. And I would, every time I got a rejection, I would put it up there, because to remind me that just because somebody said no, I was getting closer to somebody saying yes. And that's one of the things I think for music ministry is that, or for anything that you want to do ministry wise. That you have to ask people, can you help me? Can I come? You have to remember that every no leads you closer to the yes. God will open the door at the right time. And so he began to open doors. I had some really great opportunities. And then he told me to move to Nashville. He said, I have something for you in Nashville. I was serving as a worship leader at my church, but I was singing and full-time I was out. I'd pack up my dog and we'd go. And what I would do is I would go to a state like Illinois and I would set up in the middle of the state in a hotel. I'd be there for 2-3 weeks and I would just travel out from that spot and leave my dog at the hotel. She was real good. She didn't bark or anything like that. And until my husband came along, then his dog was always barking. He was always getting these notes talking about your dog has been barking the whole time. So, yeah, that's kind of where I started with music ministry. And like I said, I've had some great opportunities. I've done some wonderful things in Nashville. I've sang it on some big stages and I opened for Ashley Cleveland in Kansas in the middle of a runway. Yeah, plane runway. Yeah, it really was. It was worse than Louisiana. There was nothing out there but sunflower fields. I don't even know how those people got out there because there was nothing out there. Yeah. And so I started writing books. My father is an author. He's a poet. But I started writing books because people would always say to me, I wish I could do what you do. And I'd say, what? Go out on a road and sing? And some of them would say yes, but some of them would say, oh, start this ministry or start this or do that. And I said, I'm going to write a book, 13 Mistakes to Avoid When Starting in Music Ministry, because I had all these mistakes that I made and I wanted to help people to not make those same mistakes. But one of the things that I always would tell people is that it's never too late. As long as you have breath in your body, the dream may not look like it looked originally, but the dream is still the dream and God will accomplish his purpose. So you have to step out in faith. No matter what it is you want to start, no matter what it is you want to, don't let your dream die with you. So that turned into a book on recovery, my random life lessons, things that I've learned about being in recovery, because can't be a survivor. And I guess you can be a survivor and not be in recovery, but I'm still in recovery. I was going to Celebrate Recovery. I was going to OA, but I found that Overeaters Anonymous was a little too secular for me. So I went back to Celebrate Recovery and working my steps. And I find that when I work my steps daily, I do a lot better. And yeah. Yeah.
Wow. You've got so many books. I've got a bunch of them here on my shelf that I still look and read and remind myself of those principles that you just talked about. Because as we were talking about before the show, my ministry has pivoted. I think, and ministry is over now. And then God shows me, no, you can go and do this over here. Or I can use
right.
over here. It's not right. over. We'll be able to use you doing something else or serving in a different fashion. So,
right. And I think that's one of the things that I struggled with when I became a mom, particularly at my age. I'm older. I'm 50. And I became a mom at 47. And so I had to stop. I had to come off the road and not, I had to come off the road because of the pandemic. But when it was time to get back on the road, I had to think, what's more important right now? Is it my kids or is it me getting on the road? And I had to mourn that too, because it was a loss of part of my identity. But what I've discovered is I can still do it. I just need to plan accordingly. My kids are old enough now that I can take them with me. To some extent, my little boy is wild. He's all boy. He's always jumping off of stuff and climbing on stuff. And they're not in bed now. It's just terrible. But
I heard them in the background.
Yeah. Yeah. They're up with their dad. So
do you have them sing? Do they know how to sing at all?
Yeah. They're learning. They love music. They love music. Their favorite one is Fight My Battles.
Mm.
Yeah. That's their favorite song right now. Play My Battles and Waymaker. They love that song.
Love Waymaker. Wow. Yeah, that's a good song. Get stuck in their head at a
right
age. And but, you know, you said to me that you have new music that you produced and released. Tell us about that.
I have a song, new song, single that came out. It was like last year. I have to, money is tight because of the pandemic. And we still are recovering from that. And so I can't do a full album the way I used to. And so I've been saving up and doing a single, saving up and doing a single. So I'm recording a single now. But the last single I did is a song called Swept Away. And I wrote it because I was looking out the window. It was raining. And so it was raining really hard. And I was like, man, I'm going to get swept away. I don't want to get swept away. And I was like, wow, that's a song. It's raining again. And I don't know if you can hear me. So it was a song of doubt, but a song of hope also, because it was about, do you hear me, Lord? No matter what, though, I know my anchor is on you, is in you. I'm not going to get swept away no matter what happens. You have seen me through too much to let me drown, which let me go under. And so, yeah.
Didn't you survive a hurricane or something?
Oh, yeah. We weren't home. We left. We evacuate whenever. My husband is from Texas. And so when they start talking about hurricane, he's like, let's go. So we had left. But when we came home, there was a tree on our house, and it was crushing our garage, and it had been on our house. It stayed on our house for like 4 or 5 months. It took them almost a year to fix it. Yeah, because we were renting. Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, I got kids, and they were foster kids at that time. And so I'm like, Mel, come take my kids. This is not a safe environment. Y'all got to do something. So.
That's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. That was Irma, Hurricane Irma.
Oh, yeah. That was bad. My husband lived in Florida for many years, so he has hurricane stories too.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you have a lot of life experience that you're putting into your songs, which is usually how they're birthed.
Right. Right. I always look at what's going on, how I feel, what I want to express, and what I feel like the Lord wants me to share with people. And so my songs are hopefully songs of encouragement and hope. I tell more stories from my perspective than I write worship songs, but my songs are more about what's going on with me, because I want people to relate to them. I want them to speak to them, I guess, in the situation that they're in. And I'm not saying worship music doesn't do that, because like I said, I love to sing worship. I've been a worship leader. I'll sing a worship song. I'll write a worship song. One of my favorite songs on my last album is a worship song. It's called Linger. But even that, in that, I wanted to express to people what I was going through. I wanted to learn to linger in the presence of God. So I was praying, and I was like, Lord, I want to learn to linger. I want to learn to sit in your presence, and I want to hear you speak to me. And so I remember sitting there for a good 5 minutes, and then I was like, open my eyes, and I was looking around. I was like, Lord, you're not speaking. And so I got up, and then the next day I sat for about 10 minutes, and I was like, Lord, you're not speaking. And then the Lord, like, I heard him laugh. It was really funny. I heard the Lord laugh, like, after this was going on for about 6 or 7 days. And he was like, if you want to hear me speak, you got to linger. You got to sit there and give me a minute. And I was like, wow, okay. So let me be quiet and let me sit here and let me wait to hear you speak to me. And he did. He did. And that was how that song was birthed.
That's good stuff. I mean, we're in such a hurry. And I'm extremely busy, and God's never laughed at me as far as I know. Maybe when I tell him my plans, he's laughing at me, but I definitely have had to learn to sit a while. And don't be in such a hurry to read your Bible, do your chapter in your Bible, and then do your prayer list and leave. We need to sit and chew on
right
his word and actually wait to hear what I have to say to you. So, yeah, that's good stuff.
Now I'm in a season now where I can't linger very long because I got kids. I got a 3-year-old who's, what are you doing? Well, where are you going? What's going on? And I know the Lord understands that. But yeah, they just going by my room. I don't know if you heard him. He's like, yeah. Daddy.
Yeah, they were so.
You need to get in the bed. That's what you need to do.
Yeah, super cute. And we want to hear about your music later before the podcast ends, but we all love a good love story. So want to hear about how you and John met, how you fell in love. And you mentioned that you struggled with singleness in that season of life. So that was a good love story.
It's a good love story. What wound up happening was I went to Nashville. I moved to Nashville. The Lord said to me, go to Nashville. I have something for you there. And I said, okay. So I packed up and I went to Nashville, just packed up, left everything and got an apartment and moved to Nashville and went to Indie Heaven and just started going out about town and going to writers' nights and really getting involved in a lot of Christian activities and music ministry opportunities. And my husband says that he did a search. He was having a concert at his church. He was a gospel promoter. He was having a concert at his church. So he put in Google a search for Christian artists, and my name came up first. And I think that's real weird that he would put that in Nashville and my name would come up first. I hadn't lived in Nashville but 2 months. And so I was like, after he told me that, I was like, I know that was the Lord, because there are thousands of people who live in Nashville who sing, who've been singing there for years. Really? So why me? But anyhow, so he called me and he asked me to come and say, and so I said yes. And so I went to the concert and I remember afterwards he was supposed to pay me and he couldn't pay me because the kids had stolen the money. They'd stolen the offering. The neighborhood kids had stolen the offering. And I didn't get a meal. They had fed everybody. I didn't get a meal because the church ladies didn't want to feed me. It was just crazy. And so I was leaving and he was like, I want to thank you for coming. So I'd like to take you out to eat. And I was like, and show you around town. And I was like, show me around town. So I've been here for 2 months. I don't need you to show me around town. Not thinking he was asking me on a date. And because I've been single for so long, I was clueless. At that point, I was 38. I was 38 because we got married when I was 39. So I was 38. And so I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, I want to take you out. Finally, he didn't even say that. He just kept saying, I want to thank you. I want to take you to dinner or lunch and I want to show you around town. And so he said, can I call you sometime? And I said, sure. I said, but I'm leaving for New York City. So you'll have to wait to see me. This was in October, and I didn't tell him that I would pack up my apartment in November and not come back to Nashville until January. I would spend the entire Christmas season, holiday season at my parents' house in New York, because when you're a full-time ministry, you can do that. I just went home to New York for 8 weeks. And so he was calling, and I wasn't home, because that's when we had answer machines. And then finally, he called and told me that his aunt had passed away, and so I called him back. And I said, I'm sorry, I didn't speak to him, but I left him a message. And then I got back. It was like late January because my dad had retired. And so I had spent a little extra time in New York for his party. And so we got back. I got back to New York, to Nashville, and I called him to tell him I was back on Valentine's Day, the day before Valentine's Day. He was like, hey, I'm not calling her back because she just wants a date for Valentine's Day. And so I was like, whatever. So he called me like the day after Valentine's Day. And we went out three times. And on the third date, he asked me what I wanted in life. And I told him, I want these things. I want to be in ministry full time. I want to have children. I was just going through this list. And I said, what do you want? He said, I want to look across the table from you in 30 years and say, baby, let's go see our grandchildren. And it floored me. I was like, what? And he was like, I'm going to marry you. And I'm going to marry you before this year is out. And I was like, no, you ain't, stalker. That's crazy. Because, you know, we had only known each other like we'd been on 3 dates. And he was like determined. He was determined he was going to marry me before the year was out. And I was like, I don't think so. But he kept pursuing me and he kept taking me out. And then I told him he had to talk to the three men in my life. He had to talk to my dad. He had to talk to my brother and he had to talk to my godbrother. And if he could pass their test, then we could talk about marriage, maybe. And he talked to all three of them and passed their test. And yeah, that's a whole nother story. Yeah. But then he asked me again to marry him. And I told him I wasn't ready. And I was praying about it. And the Lord shared with me, he laid it on my heart that I shouldn't be afraid because the man he was is not the man he was going to be. My husband has his own testimony. He's been in prison. He's been out in the streets. He's run the streets. He's just been he has his own testimony to share. And it's amazing how God is faithful to his word, because he just got in the mail today his MBA degree. So when I met him, he didn't have any college degree, but he went to college, he went to undergrad, and then he got an MBA. And today he got the actual degree. And I was like, wow, Lord, you said the man that I married was not going to be the man that I wound up with. And it wasn't that he wasn't good to me. He was great. He's always been great. I've never felt more beautiful than I have with my husband. I know he loves me. I know he thinks I look good. He loves my stinky breath in the morning. He thinks I'm great. He tells me I'm beautiful all the time. He buys me flowers. He just really is attentive to me. He takes care of me right now, especially because I've been so sick. And yeah, but I see him developing as a man of God. I see him developing in terms of his prayer life. I see him developing in his own ministry. When we first got married, he didn't have any of that. He didn't have any education. He didn't have any ministry, but now he does. And I see God moving in him. Now he wants to pastor. And so I'm just real excited for him and our future. And yeah, that's our love story. But we got married though. Let me tell you this. So I told him, yes, finally I would marry him. And then he flew to New York in May of that year. We had started dating in February of that year. In May, he flew to New York. He spoke to my dad, and my dad was all on it. My dad was like, that's fine. I like you, which was surprising to me because I thought my dad was going to be like, no. And then we got married in September 5th. So what he said was true. He said he was going to marry me before the year was out, 9 months. It took 9 months, but I married him and I don't regret it all.
Amen. That is a great story. And it gives hope to those listening, that those of us that have been through abuse and have poured relationships in the past, we feel like we're never going to find anybody good out there. But there are good guys out there. Everybody knows me and Brian's story. He's been on the podcast a few times and we've told our story, and we're just so grateful the Lord bringing us together. And we're not perfect, but we enjoy each other's company. We don't fight. It's taken so long for us to find each other that we've never had a real fight in the 13 years of marriage that we've had. And we serve the Lord together, and we both have grown in different ways, just like you and John. Brian's not the same as he was when we met, and I'm not either. And there are good guys out there. There are good women out there. I have male listeners too. So
yeah, I would encourage people to wait on the Lord. Don't settle. Don't think you can change somebody. That was my big thing. My husband had some quirks that I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can get over this, because he was from the streets. And so I was like, what am I supposed to do? And the Lord was like, don't try to change him. Don't try to change anybody, because all you will do is mess yourself up. You'll be disappointed and you'll be defeated and y'all will wind up breaking up. But if you go into it knowing that you can't change him and you are willing to live with that, I always tell people, I told my brother this the other day. I said, don't marry the person that you can, how did I say it? Don't marry the person you can live with. Marry the person you can't live without. Because that's what makes the difference. And you pray about those quirks and you ask the Lord to fix you first and foremost before you ask the Lord to fix your husband or your wife. And you'll find that you become more tolerant, that you change. And as you change and you're more loving and you're more accepting, then you find that they become more willing to change. So that would be my advice in that area.
Excellent advice. I've had to unlearn some of my behaviors from my first marriage, my abusive marriage. And the Lord's had to teach me. I think I have more flaws than my husband. And Ryan is so funny and good natured, and we get along great. And I made a few mistakes with blowing up in our beginning of our marriage. I'd react to certain things. And I'm getting better. I'm not perfect. I'm definitely getting better at it.
Right. Amen.
There's hope. There's hope for all of us with the Lord.
Right.
And I know we talked about a lot of stuff, and I know we only touched the surface. Give our listeners some closing advice before we hear your song, Recovering from an Abusive Relationship and Coming Out on the Other Side.
Okay. I would say that you are not what happened to you. You are worth it. You may have made some choices, but it's not your fault. And so give it to the Lord and leave it in the Lord's hands. And I know it's hard. I know we go back and we pick it up. I know it's easy to beat ourselves up. But I was reading in my devotionals, my YouVersion devotional was saying, whose thought is that? When you have a negative thought, whose thought is that? Is that your thought or is that the thought that the enemy has placed in your mind? And so if you think about it that way, whose thought is, am I thinking right now? Am I thinking God's thoughts towards me? Am I thinking the devil's thoughts towards me? That really appalls you. It'll really stop you and make you think about what I need to do next. And so I would just encourage everyone to think that. Whose thoughts are you thinking? Are you thinking God's thoughts or are you thinking the enemy's thoughts? Don't give the enemy any more power than he needs. I think we give the enemy more power than he even has, because I think a lot of times he trains us to do things and then he walks away. And so we continue to act in that way because that's what we know. That's what we used to. That's what our go back to. That's why I think I gained my weight back, because that was my go back to. I didn't stop and say, okay, Lord, how should I handle this? I need you to hold me. I need you to hold my heart because my heart is broken. And had I done that, I think I'd be in a different place. But even in that, I'm not going to beat myself up, because great is his mercy towards me. Great is his faithfulness towards me. And all things work together for the good of them that love him and are called according to his purpose. And I know I'm called according to his purpose. So that's what I would encourage everybody to know, that you are called to according to his purpose.
Amen. Yeah. You're such a blessing. Everything you said today was just like gold. And it was so worth the wait to have you on the show. Can you share your resources, how they can connect with you?
The best place to go is my website, www.ministryofnaima.com. And Naima is spelled N-A-I-M-A. That would be the best way.
And everything's right there.
Yep, everything. All my music, all my books, everything.
So announce your song for us. What are we going to be listening to?
You're going to be listening to Swept Away. It was produced by Evan Sealing. He's an amazing young producer out of Nashville. Yeah, he's just great. He really pulled a lot of me out. So it's called Swept Away.
Amen. Thanks for coming on the show. It's so good to see you. Love you, sister.
You too. Love you, too. Thank you for having me. I'm so appreciated.
So enjoy Naima's song.
God bless you all.
It's raining again. I don't know if you can hear me. Clouds rolling in, thunder echoes, and the forecast calls for dreary weather. Survive this sinking sand and deadly tides. I won't be swept away. I can't be swept away. The sharp winds slashing my dreams into pieces. I'm awfully thin-skinned, but I know in who
Thank you for listening to the Wounds of the Faithful podcast. If this episode has been helpful to you, please hit the subscribe button and tell a friend. You can connect with us at dswministries.org, where you'll find our blog along with our Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel links. Hope to see you next week.